all the different zones, not just politics, all sectors. So I think that's really what has changed the tide here in Oregon. And, you know, you could say I volunteered as tribute to be the one to continue to tell our stories, but also use my expertise to protect our rights and protect the rights of others and make sure people understand that this is overall a human rights issue. Trans rights are human rights. So in telling my story as a trans person who's Black and Native, and telling my story as a queer person, a pansexual person, I humanize it and make sure everyone knows, you know, this is about all of us, you know, and I'm not afraid to tell that story.
That was KBOO's Dawn Merrill speaking with Zelos Marchant. We heard excerpts of interviews with both Democratic candidates for Oregon House District 35, Zelos Marchant and Farah Chaichi. Extended interviews with both of these candidates and many more running in the May primary can be found at kboo.fm or at oregon2022.info. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for listening.
Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. Right now, during our annual spring membership drive, your support can go even further. Contribute today at kboo.fm/give. And your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $12,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Maximize the impact of your support for KBOO right now.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, for the working class, by the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And we are not being joined by a guest today. It is just Rachel and I. Rachel and I, for the next half hour or so.
So buckle up.
That's right. You are about to be wowed and amazed by the two of us in our conversation. And we are going to talk about what just happened at the OEA Representative Assembly. So every year, those of you that aren't aware, every year OEA, Oregon Education Association, has a representative assembly where delegates from all over the state of Oregon, educators, come and discuss and debate numerous items, and a great time is had by all, right, Rachel?
Oh, yeah, and it lasts for, now that we do partially online and partially in person, there are, you know, different meetings throughout the weeks leading up to the OEARA, which is on a Friday evening and all day and night. And we discuss legislative objectives, policy amendments, bylaw changes, and new business items that we want OEA to focus on for the next year.
Yes, and we also talk about candidates who are running for certain positions.
And we have a wonderful special guest in Stephen Siegel because he won Region 1 Vice President. Congratulations.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was really, it was a lot of work, and I was exhausted, especially those last 2 weeks of campaigning and making a whole lot of phone calls, and but it was also really exciting, and I got to talk with and meet a lot of really neat folks. And yeah, I don't know what else. What should I tell everybody about the campaign? I don't know.
Well, it was a pretty close election, and so it was a real. You had to work hard. Both candidates had to work really hard. It was not an easy race. And maybe you could just talk about some of the things that you were, your platform that you were running on, some of the things that you hope to bring to the position, and maybe changes you hope to bring to OEA.
Yeah. So Oregon is divided up into three regions in terms of how OEA divides it. And region one is it's basically the greater Portland metro area. So geographically, it's much smaller than one third of Oregon, but in terms of membership, it's about one third. So my job as region one vice president is mostly it's being a liaison with leaders within OEA and with local leaders. That's sort of the minimal expectation. But some of the things that I would hope to bring, that I want to bring, are a sense of solidarity within the region. And so I'm going to be looking for ways to encourage collective action within the region. Right now, there's not a lot of sort of cross-pollinating. There's not a lot of folks in one local working together with folks in another local. So I'm hoping to bring that, so that's more than just sitting in meetings together with people from other locals, but actually taking action together. Mm-hmm. I'm also really interested in bringing a focus on community organizing. We talk about that some in our unions, but there's not a lot of know-how and how to do that and how to do that well. So I would like to bring some trainings in for our locals, either rank and file or local leaders, to learn more about how to do that well. And I'm also really interested in doing some education around class and the class struggle. And I felt like I wanted to name that because, you know, we're doing a better job of at least talking about race and racism and white supremacy and, you know, racial equity. And I think that's super important, especially when we're actually taking action on it and it's not just performative. But the other piece is class. We need to be talking about both of those things together. And frankly, I feel like, you know, the powers that be are, they're happy that we're leaving that out of the conversation. We need to be talking about the workers and the working class and poor struggling. And why are they struggling? Because of the systems that we have in place right now. So I want to bring an education piece that hopefully brings some more awareness for folks about why we are struggling. Why is school funding an issue? What's going on with privatization? Why is this happening? Is it just, you know, is it just happening for no reason? No, I mean, there are reasons. It's about profit.
Yeah, and building those alliances with other unions outside of education and workers that are struggling to start a union, and really building that connection across labor connection. Yeah.
And one other thing that I comes to mind right now that I really want to focus on is we have some issues around what's commonly called gatekeeping or power hoarding, where folks in power make it difficult for others, you know, the rank and file, to really engage in meaningful ways. They sort of provide them with, you know, well, if you want to get involved here, I need somebody to join this committee or something like that, right? But it's very controlled. And I understand that in some sense, you know, if you're a leader, you don't want somebody to mess up because it's gonna, you know, might fall back on you to try to fix the mess. But we need to be willing to take the risk. And if somebody messes up on something, they mess up. But if you don't allow folks to have those opportunities, they're going to disengage. They're not going to see the real value in a union. They're going to third person their union. They're going to talk about it as if it's this other thing that's not, that they're not a part of. So I really want to try to open up opportunities, not that I decide what those opportunities are, but just encourage folks and support members that want to do things.
And that's how those trainings and political education come so important, because when people are speaking the same language and have similar objectives and, you know, fighting for the working class, then those mess ups are less likely, because everyone's kind of on the same page about what we're fighting for and what direction we're going in.
Right.
It's important. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and we're, you know, we're predominantly a white membership. So, you know, and I identify as white. I think you identify as white. So, you know, we're going to mess up on, you know, on race, and we're just going to have to own that and, you know, and move on from that, right? Learn from it and keep moving forward.
Well, it's also important to think about those tenets of white supremacy too, and that control and, you know, importance of the written word and, you know, all those kind of gatekeeping aspects to our greater structures are things that we also, that prevents people who are not white from feeling represented, included, part of, and also having agency. So, you know, we have to really work hard to dismantle those tools of gatekeeping, I guess you could call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually kind of a good segue into one of the big changes that we saw at the RA with our equity director position. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what that position, like how it came to be last year and what that looked like and what some of those changes are that we voted on this year.
Yeah. So for those of you that aren't aware of OEA and the different positions, leadership positions, there is a position that has been in place for a few years, not a long time, but a few years. Racial Equity Director is the name of the position. And there has been very little support for that position. So that person works full-time, usually, you know, as an educator, and yet they're expected to attend a whole lot of meetings within OEA, and they're basically the person who is in charge of supporting our members of color. It's a big responsibility, and you know, and it's largely been a tokenized position. If you look at the stipend that goes to the racial equity director compared to, say, the stipend that I will be getting, not that it's a giant amount of money, but it's much less. And even if you look at the amount of speech time that's allowed for the racial equity director at the representative assembly compared to regional vice presidents, it's 3 minutes versus 5 minutes. It's like everything is just less. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, you could say is ironic for someone who is focused on equity that they get less resources than anybody else. So last year we passed a new business item, an NBI, saying that, hey, let's look at the bylaws and let's bring a bylaw to the vote this year that would change that structure and allow that equity director or racial equity director to not have to work full time as an educator and to have that time instead to be released to basically be paid by OEA to do the job of focusing on equity. And the name changed from racial equity director to equity director, with the thinking being that, you know, equity is about more than race. And that's what we ended up debating and discussing at this year's Representative Assembly, right? During a time when our budget is not looking real good, and that was used to push back against this idea of having a full-time release equity director. So Rachel, I don't know, do you want to add more to it? I mean,
well, the good thing is that it passed, and yes. So now that is a change in our bylaws, which was really fantastic. I mean, there was so much debate about the money aspect, and that came up a lot when it came to things like, you know, climate change, issues around climate change, and I can't remember some of the other things, but that money piece, that it came up in very specific conversations, not every conversation, but very specific ones.
Yes.
Which was clear that budget talking point was really about a political ideology and not really about the budget.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's great that it passed. So next year we will have an election, and that person, whoever that is, our new and our first equity director, they will have some support, which they really need to do that job. And that person has, you know, up until now, that person has been a person of color. So it's really been a tokenized position, taking advantage of a person of color for their free labor to support other members of color. I mean, it's just wrong on multiple levels.
Yeah. Well, that was one victory.
Yes.
Should we talk about some of the, what were we going to talk about next?
MBI? Well, there was one legislative objective that passed that was interesting. And that will have us really exploring, looking into what we need to do to shorten the probationary period for educators. So right now, the probationary period is 3 years. And if you move from one school district to another, that probationary period starts all over again. And when you're in a probationary period, you're not as protected. You're more vulnerable at, you know, if administration for whatever reason doesn't really care for you, doesn't like you, there doesn't have to be that same sort of documentation, the same sort of more thorough process. It's much easier to just say, don't really like this person. You know, we're not going to renew their contract, right? So this proposal was saying, hey, let's shorten that, because that's one of many things that could discourage people from becoming educators, right? You know, I mean, if they don't have that same kind of job security, if they're going to be on probation for 3 years and possibly longer if they move districts,
mm-hmm.
That's a sort of a disincentive for some people to become educators. Yeah, what did you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, especially in today's climate around, you know, academic freedom and the kind of limits to the books you can use in your classroom and the topics that you can teach, and all those attacks on basically talking about race, social emotional learning. I mean, you know, anything that's not pleasant and supporting of white male Judeo-Christian framework, I guess. So I think it is important to have those like protections in place much quicker, much sooner. And also, I mean, just in case people think, oh, well, isn't that a bad thing? What if it's a bad teacher? Every educator, there is a process that if you are doing something wrong, if you are being unethical, if you are harming students, there is a process to be removed. So even as a tenured teacher, it doesn't give you protection to stay if you're doing something that is harmful. And so, you know, people need to remember that. And I think, you know, if you're really looking at teachers that are harmful, that stay in the system, that is a failure on the part of administrators and HR, because they have to do their job and their due diligence to remove harmful educators. And that's part of their job. That's what they're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
It's not union protecting those people. It's
no
union process, just like any other, you know, accusation in the private sector. So
right. Yeah. At that point, our union is just about making sure that there is due process, right? They'll do that for anybody. Just making sure that the process is fair. But as far as, you know, fighting to keep a teacher who is, you know, harmful to students, no, that's not about our union, right? Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio, and we are in the middle of our spring membership drive. KBOO, KBOO does not take corporate money for advertising. We rely on you. We rely on our listeners for sustaining us financially, and you can go to kboo.fm/give to donate. Rachel, we have just a few more minutes left. Let's talk about. Yes, there is much more to talk about. So the main motions, the main way that delegates to the Representative Assembly bring their ideas, their proposals, those are called new business items, or what we shorten, because we love to shorten everything, NBIs. So there were about 35 or so NBIs that were brought to the floor of the Representative Assembly and debated and voted on. And let's just pick a few in our remaining few minutes that we want to talk about. So there were two different NBIs calling on OEA to make some movement towards pressuring the state to divest our retirement money, our PERS, right? PERS is our retirement money. One was to divest from fossil fuel. And do you want to say anything about that one, Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, that was just to join Divest Now, right?
Divest Oregon.
Divest Oregon, which is a coalition of different organizations that are part of PERS that want to divest from fossil fuels. And so it wasn't even about making OEA divest. It was about joining a coalition working towards that, putting pressure. And that was strangely very contentious. My favorite line of the day was like, well, if you want to talk about like climate change or whatever, like it was just a side cast off kind of idea, you know, and not something that's, you know, threatening life on this planet as we know it. But that did pass.
Yes.
And then what was the other one?
The other one was to divest from a group, it's called the NSO group, that finances a spyware company.
Yeah.
So this company, was it Pegasus Spyware, I think was maybe the name. Anyway, this spyware company sells their products to governments, authoritarian style governments. I mean, that would probably include ours. Mm-hmm. That then uses that to, you know, and I may be messing up the word some, but basically uses it to hack into people's phones and spy on people. And who are they spying on? They are spying on journalists. They are spying on activists. They are spying on labor, right? They're spying on union members, on educators. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so we really don't want our money being invested in that. And the thing about both of those things, both the fossil fuel and the spyware, is both of those are no longer financially
profitable.
Profitable, yes, thanks. And so that's a nice argument to be able to use, but I also sometimes, I mean, it gives me hesitation too, because I feel like
we shouldn't be profiting off of.
Well, we could be. So are we saying that if it's profitable, it's okay for us to invest our money in really bad stuff? Like, okay, what are we investing in? You know, the nuclear weapons industry, because that's profitable right now and that's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's one other climate change focused, and I believe it was an MBI, it might have been a legislative objective to have to push for sort of an expectation of K-12 climate education. Also debated. People talked about whether it was like appropriate for younger grades. And as somebody who teaches second grade and teaches about climate justice every year, 7 and 8 year olds understand that something that harms our planet is not a good thing. So yes. You can do it in a developmentally appropriate way. But that did pass with some debate.
Yes.
And then in our short little bit of time left, should we talk about the organizing aspects, those organizing MBIs?
Yes. So we have one that passed and one that didn't. The one that passed will basically form a mobilizing committee. So this was sort of a way to work around OEA's really tight hold on member contact. And because, you know, I mean, talk about gatekeeping. And so this will be a way for us to be able to organize and mobilize members that we haven't had before, right? So this will be a committee that's really focused on solidarity actions. And then the one that didn't pass, unfortunately, was calling on us to really just explore how we could go about organizing education workers who aren't part of a union right now. So for example, first student bus drivers who are just, you know, first student is a private contractor, or preschool workers, or charter schools, which unfortunately, when we started talking about charter schools, it scared folks off. And so that one didn't pass. So we can bring it back next year.
Yeah. And it really, I mean, I know that charter school, that can be a very tricky topic because it's privatizing education, but really the impetus behind bringing that into the fold is that they are workers. They are education workers. They are they should be unionized. They are paid less. They are treated worse because they have no protections. And if we bring them into the fold of OEA, they can fight for better working conditions, but also better conditions for their students. I mean, some of the practices at charter schools are really harmful. Absolutely. And so it was unfortunate that kind of derailed that idea of a task force, because really we should be empowering all educators in all sectors to be able to fight for strong schools and even maybe, you know, bring those charter schools back into the public school fold.
Absolutely.
And it has happened in Chicago. CTU has organized charter schools very successfully. But unfortunately, it is time to go. So thank you for joining us on KBOO. Thanks to Jamie Partridge for making this a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Rachel.
This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another Labor Radio show. Thank you.
Sometimes you see that I'm mad. Don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. People in custody in county jails who are found by the court to be unable